So now we're going to do something a little bit different. Where are our people who are supposed to be bringing these stools up on the... Okay, so we're going to do something slightly different. We're going to actually have people presenting cases that they've worked with, like tough cases who came in and chatted with them, and then, this isn't that. That's next. Sorry, I'm confused. We're going to have... No, this is up here. So we're going to have... So what we're going to do is we're going to have actually, these guys are going to, we have some of our students that are going to present little short presentations on important topics. So we have Jamie, who I'm seeing right there. Hey, Jamie. And he's not presented up on the screen, but he's going to be the first one. And he's zooming in from the UK, and he's going to share with us on heavy metals. And then Jan and Jane, come on up. We're going to all sit on the... See, we're going to all be here, and we're going to support each other. And Jamie's going to start with talking about heavy metals, and Jane and Jan are going to be talking about different topics, and we'll introduce them when they're ready. So she doesn't reach. She's a little girl. So now put him up on the screen before his slides so they can see him. Jamie, you got to be seen. He's cute anyway, so. Put him up on the screen. Hi, Jamie.
So when we look at hair analysis, we're really looking at the metabolic activity within the body. And this is best reflected in scalp samples. This is a preferred source. We can use pubic hair, chest hair, nails, and other tissues, but because they grow at different paces, we don't see the same patterns that show up, but they can be used as a secondary screen, and we do sometimes use that to rule out contamination if we see very high levels of heavy metals on a hair test. The levels are really important, but probably even more important is actually the relationships or the ratios between different minerals, because they're very important in regulating both psychological and also metabolic functions like stress, blood sugar, blood pressure, a lot of the things that we've been talking about during the conference. So some of the ratios here will give you an idea that we can get an insight into digestion, stress, our thyroid, our sex hormones, our adrenals, our blood sugar. And again, I won't explain how these are all interrelated, but this gives us a very good overview. It gives us a 30,000 foot view, and it gives us a trend into some of these different neuroendocrine functions. So we know when it comes to health, it's very important to look at biochemical individuality. This term was coined by Dr. Roger Williams. And one of the challenging aspects of using nutrients is this complex dynamic system. So we know that different people respond differently to the same nutrient, but also that as an individual's biochemistry changes, their nutritional needs change. So the same nutrient can have a very different effect on the same person at different times. And the hair analysis gives us a sort of a meaningful and a practical way to actually track this. So when it comes to stress, we know that stress affects us both physically and psychologically. And a lot of us are familiar with this fight or flight response and the fact that stress underlies many chronic diseases, especially inflammation. And hair analysis can give us a very good insight into stress and how a person's been impacted by stress. One of the primary nutrients that's affected is sodium. We see an increased retention in sodium that's regulated by aldosterone, and we see this increase in sodium in the hair analysis. And the ratio between sodium and potassium starts to increase, and this gives us a clue that there could be some increased inflammation. We know that someone's going to use or burn through more magnesium, and also they're more likely to deplete zinc, which helps retain these intracellular minerals. So I'm going to give you a quick example here, and this is one of the big misunderstandings when it comes to hair analysis and why you really need to understand the interrelationships. So if we look at magnesium and potassium, these are primarily intracellular minerals, but under stress, these are quickly lost in large quantities from inside of the cell. When they move outside of the cell, this allows sodium to rise, and this accentuates the stress response. We then see a deficiency inside the cell, but as the blood picks up the loss of these nutrients, the hair follicle will actually pick up some of these excess minerals, and it will show high in the hair analysis, and also it will carry it out to the kidneys, and it will be excreted also in the urine. So we see an increased level of these nutrients in the hair, which doesn't mean that you have too much. It just means that you've got a bioavailable or a loss of these specific nutrients. So again, I'm not going to go through all of this, but we know the critical importance of magnesium with regards to controlling how calcium is deposited with our adrenals, with blood sugar, with heart rhythm regulation, but also with within the Krebs cycle, with the active form of vitamin D, with detox pathways, with glutathione synthesis. So it's really important that we have adequate amounts of magnesium. This is a good way to actually assess magnesium status within the body by looking at some of these ratios and looking at all of the ratios in correlation. So I'm going to flick through these slides. I've given you a lot of information on these slides so you can flick through them, you know, at your own leisure. I just really want to get a couple of the key points here across. So if we look at the calcium-magnesium ratio, when we see an elevated ratio here, we know that there's a deficiency in magnesium. So we can have what we call an absolute deficiency in magnesium, where the magnesium level shows low, or we can have a relative deficiency where we see an increased calcium-magnesium ratio. So there's a number of different ways of assessing magnesium status. You can do a red blood cell test, or you can also use the hair analysis and look at all of the nutrients in combination. One of the reasons I like using a hair analysis is we can get an insight into the adrenal function when we look at the sodium level and specifically the sodium magnesium ratio. So in this instance, when you see a very low sodium level, I would be more cautious about giving higher doses of magnesium without supporting their adrenals, because magnesium can be a sedative mineral and it can actually slow someone down and make them more tired. And then a couple of examples I'm going to show here with you are related to, I wanted to relate some of the stuff into the endocrine piece. So if we look at the relationship between estrogen and copper, copper is an essential nutrient mineral that's vital for life, but it's very common to see copper dysregulation nowadays, and too much or too little copper is unhealthy. And we also know that as estrogen builds up, we get an excess of copper in the cells and the tissues, mainly stored in the brain and the liver. We also need adequate adrenal gland function to stimulate ceruloplasmin production in the liver, which actually binds the copper. Otherwise, we get an excess of free copper. And as we get an increase in copper, we start to see zinc decrease, we start to see potassium decrease, we see stress intensify, we see magnesium decrease. So you can see the knock-on effect that this has with all the other minerals within the body. Here are some of the copper-related symptoms. So you can see very wide-ranging. It's highly correlated with yeast infections, candida, heavy metal toxicity. One of the reasons I like to assess and actually look at nutrient balance and heavy metals is because if you don't clear up the heavy metals and you go straight after trying to clear up some of the gut dysbiosis and some of the yeast infections, they can proliferate on the backdrop if there's mercury toxicity, and they can actually come out of the biofilms, and this can cause more disruption. So one of the reasons copper is such a problem is because the estrogen in birth control pills and hormone replacement therapy raises copper tissue levels. Also, copper IUDs do the same thing. And what we see is a transgenerational passing of this mineral. So we get an excess of copper that's transmitted in the utero to the fetus. So the babies will often start life with more copper. The copper is stored in the brain and the liver, and it really affects liver and gallbladder function. And it also has a very important role in psychological functions, mood behavior, and mental health, especially with young female children. And it starts to deplete zinc and some of the other important nutrients. So what we see very often when someone has an imbalance between zinc and copper is their mind will start racing because they have this excess of copper in the brain. It's a very strong conductor, and it produces this very driven feeling behaviorally and emotionally, but their body will be exhausted because they'll have a slow metabolism with regards to their thyroid and their adrenals. So I'm just going to share with you, just to finish off, just one nice example, I thought, and I like to use hair analysis with multiple generations. So I have quite a few families that I work with, sometimes two, sometimes three generations. And this was a nice example of a 76-year-old who unfortunately was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. And when I was taking his history, he mentioned that he had a painting business. So we know that back when he was in his 30s, 40, 50 years ago, there was lead in the paint. So immediately I said to him, look, it'd be interesting to see the level of lead that comes up in your hair analysis. We don't know that it's going to show, but this gives us a very good example of where hair analysis can play an important role. So you can see his lead level, which is here, I don't know if you can see when I highlight the slides, is at 3.4. And lead levels, the top of the range is at 1. So it's 3 times higher than the upper level of the range. His copper level is about 25 times higher than it should be, or 20 times higher. And then what we see actually happen here is his granddaughter has a disorder called achondroplasia, which is a growth disorder. And if we look at her levels, which are on the bottom here, we see a number of interesting patterns. Because of this excess of copper that's been passed down, if you can see her zinc level here, her zinc level is almost undetectable here at 4. This is probably the lowest zinc level that I've ever seen on a test. And we also see a huge amount of stress with her sodium levels coming up. And a lot of these minerals have been totally displaced. And her father actually has struggled with anxiety and been on anti-anxiety medication as well. So it's really affected multiple generations. So I thought that was quite a nice example to show. Just to finish off, I wanted to just explain to you about the different labs that I use and recommend for hair analysis. There are quite a few different labs that will run hair analysis, but often the medical labs will use a wide range of normal levels and they won't look at ideal levels. The challenge with this is it doesn't recognize this dynamic metabolic system and how this interrelates to what we've been talking about today. So the two labs that I recommend are analytical research labs and trace elements. They're the only two labs worldwide that don't overwash the samples with harsh detergents before the analytical procedure. Their lab results can be compared for accuracy. You know, they're often run side by side. One of the problems with overwashing the samples is the water-soluble nutrients, especially sodium and potassium, are really affected by the wash procedures. So we see the levels of sodium and potassium are sometimes two-thirds lower when they're run with the other labs. And this is important for assessing the adrenals, the thyroid, stress, someone's detoxification capability. So we can see if someone's likely to be storing heavy metals that aren't being shown in the hair analysis. So these labs have high reliability, they have high validity. This will give you an example of a comparison when split samples were sent and the consistency between the labs. The only thing I would say, the only one nutrient, for some reason, we don't know why this is the case, but aluminium shows differently with analytical research labs and trace elements. This is something to be aware of. Aluminium is the most abundant heavy metal that we see in the environment today. So again, that's just something, if you run them side by side, that's something to be aware of. So that's my presentation for today. You can find my website, more information. I'm just redoing everything at the moment. And if you'd like to talk to me, I will do a free 15-minute strategy session with any of you to talk to you a little bit more about it if you'd like to learn more. So thank you very much, and I'll hand back over to Rita Marie.
Thank you, Jamie. That was awesome. Everybody give him a hand. And if you can stay on to the end of the three presentations, we'll all be available to do like a little panel Q&A for a little bit.
Sure.
All right, great. So let's have it, Jane. Jane is the founder of the Second Heart Cleanse, which is a really great new online program that I just went through last week, and it was awesome. And she's going to talk about liver and gallbladder assessment. So take it away, Jane.
All right. We have a slideshow coming up.
Can you switch to Jane's slideshow, please?
Can you hear me?
Just talk.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
So my background is, my reason for being here and doing what I'm doing is in my whole adult life has been really about trying to avoid medication and surgery. I feel like when I was born, I was a pharmaceutical kid. You know, you get a sniffle and mom hands you a remedy. I mean, I can't fault them for, you know, trying to make me feel better, right, and love me in that way that they tried. And so my adult life, I actually ended up in Western medicine as a career on the administrative side. And I ended up being a contract negotiator for the transplant service at UC San Francisco, one of the top ones in the country. I'm assuming they still are at the time, but this was a while ago. And I also started, and not proud of this, But I also helped start the managed care program at San Francisco General Hospital. And that's actually when I got disenchanted with the healthcare system, big time disenchanted. And I watched doctors being paralyzed, and I watched administrators like me, and nurses who, not to fault nurses, but who were telling the doctors how to treat their patients. Mm-hmm. And I saw doctors just being, their power being taken away. And then I had some issues myself, and then that's when I started, I wanted to learn how to heal myself. And as I did that, I became a Pilates instructor, then a massage therapist, and then a colon hydrotherapist. And it was the colon hydrotherapy, actually, it's working. Not working yet. It was the colon hydrotherapy that was actually, you know, I can say that was my best job ever. And because I actually touched a lot of bellies. Aren't quite working yet. And I got a different look. So I didn't have, I always thought, you know, maybe I should go to medical school, maybe, you know, I should be a nurse. And I kept getting the message, no, don't do it. It'll ruin you. And it wasn't until I went to the colon hydrotherapy when I was massaging bellies and I was in that emotional place where I started feeling things. I started feeling the energy. I started having a different conversation with the body. And after hundreds of clients, right, I actually recognized the relationship between the colon, which I was helping them clear, and the liver. And I don't even remember how it all happened, but I just noticed this relationship. I almost felt like the liver was being ignored. So this is kind of about me, is that this is some of the stuff that I've actually healed myself from over the years. And as I had an ailment, then I got a new certification. So what I learned about the liver as I started studying it is that, you know, it's this big powerhouse, right? It's the largest internal organ of the body. And it's a producer, right? It produces bile, clotting proteins, immune factors, and cholesterol. It's a protector. So it's protecting the rest of the body, right, by detoxifying. So every toxin that comes in through the body, that comes in through the bloodstream, goes through the liver, and it has to detoxify it. So I wish I don't have a whole lot of time here, but I would have gotten into, you know, phase one and phase two of liver detoxification. And I could possibly throw some of that stuff in later on, and I'll do that. Because that's kind of fun, because what I started doing was started playing with the foundational principles of food. And how could I enhance phase one liver detoxification? How can I enhance phase two? And it's also the nourisher, right? It carries all the nutrients all throughout the body. Okay, so that's the big. So what I learned and how I look at assessing liver health is, and we've gotten a lot of information, you guys have a lot of data, a lot of tests to look through, but I want to just stop and look at the foundational. And it starts with listening, and listening to that client. And that's what my colon hydrotherapy practice did, is that I had to listen for a long time. And then I observed in them things that they didn't tell me, or maybe they didn't put down on their form. And then the last thing I would do is actually go to the lab tests and the assessments, and I do that to this day. So when I listen, right, and we hear this all the time, right? I've got headaches, but the headache might be in a certain place, right? In the head, we have fatigue. You know, you listen to what they're eating. They've got a poor diet. Maybe they have blurred vision, so liver stagnation. These are all the symptoms of liver stagnation. Medication use. We know that medications have to be the purpose of them. They get detoxified in the liver. The liver, every time a toxin hits it or a medication hits it, it creates oxidative stress every single time. Joint or muscle pain. We know that the liver is a gateway to the muscles and the joints. Maybe they've had gallbladder attacks or gallbladder stones or removal, depression or mood swings. The next one, drama, anger. So if you've got somebody who's kind of really angry, I always look at the liver to see if there's some stagnation in there. Maybe they get nauseous after eating fatty foods, all right? Problem maybe with the gallbladder, low motivation or feeling out of sync with life. Maybe they're sensitive to caffeine or environmental chemicals, so that'd be phase one, liver detoxification I would look at. Heavy metal exposure. And then this is a big one here. If they have a gut infection, bacterial imbalance, you know, if they've got something going on, you need to start looking at the liver, because the liver, all those toxins, all those infections are creating toxins that have to be detoxified in the liver. So the liver has to normally detoxify metabolic function, right? A cell dies, right? It's going to recycle and make new. But then on top of it, there's going to be all these infections that are creating new toxins, so that's going to start piling it up. And what I find is that it's the phase one might be working okay sometimes and going faster, and phase two is really sluggish, and that's when things start really backing up. So that's what I listen for. And this list is really long. I could go on forever, and I'm sure you guys could add to this list. So then I observe. So then I'm watching them. You know, where are they holding? You know, are they? I have an 82-year-old client, and I did a house call. And I didn't even know how. She has pancreatic insufficiency. They're actually talking about removing her pancreas. She's 82. Yeah. And her daughter brought me in and just to have a talk with her, and could we look at her diet? I'm like, okay. And we also knew that she had a kidney infection, but she kept going like this. And she kept giving me some of the signs and symptoms. And I just listened and I observed. I had no labs, because I was not taking her on. She had doctors. I was not taking her on as, you know, looking at her labs or whatnot. I was just looking at her. And she kept on going like this. And then I kind of said to her daughter, I said, you know, I'm a little concerned about her liver, that there's something else going on here besides the pancreas and this infection. Well, and a couple days later, she ended up in the hospital. And they found a cyst on her liver. But what was interesting is that no doctor had found this yet. She was sleepwalking in the middle of the night one night and either hit something really hard or something fell on her, but she forgot to tell somebody. So these observations are really important. I never had a lab test. And it actually took the doctors a long time in the hospital to actually find that cyst. I realized that it was a blood cyst. I mean, she's better now and she's fine, but she has seven daughters. You want to say how much advice she was getting? You know, and I told one of them and I said, you know, she's getting a lot of advice and she's really confused now. So you guys need to either decide, either I'm going to help her with her food or you all are. And then after this had happened at the hospital, now they all go, what does Jane say? So, some of the other signs, if they have hives, you know, they've had it for a long time and they don't even think about it anymore, so they don't think about telling you, right? Jaundice, I learned about three or more creases in between the eyebrows. A lot of times that's alcoholism. A lot of around the eyes, if you see any of these symptoms around the eyes, yellow discoloration below eyelids, gray ring around cornea, the obvious, the overweight belly fat, you know, I'm thinking fatty liver, blood sugar issues, different colored stools, bulbous nose, you know, it's real on the tip of your nose there, real red. And then excessive vertical ridges on nails or splitting cuticles. And then the outsides of the tongue on the sides of the tongue, if you stick your tongue out, if you have irritation or redness on the sides of the tongue. So then, I've done all that, right? And then we go into assessment. I'll make this really fast because I got to end here. And you guys have these in here. But this is where this program really was important for me. Because as a colon hydrotherapist, people would come in with all these symptoms, and I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And so now I have the tools like this little gem that Dr. Rita Marie put together in the master tracker, that when I get lab results, when they bring this to me, now I have this little cheat sheet. Well, I'm still learning because I haven't been doing labs for 30 years, right? And this, it just makes my life so much easier. It actually confirms things that I have learned intuitively. All right, so you don't have to be a doctor, a nurse, a pharmacist, okay? Just listen, right? Observe, and she'll give you all the assessments. All right, so here's some of the other stuff. If you want to take a picture real quick, that's second slide.
You'll get all these.
You'll get all these.
Yeah, they'll be on the site.
And then so my clients started coming in. This is my last slide. My clients started coming in, and they started doing this liver flush, right? And there's controversy about liver flush, right? That it can be dangerous. I've seen some crazy ones out there. But my clients were doing so great. And I thought, well, let me look into this, right? And so I started with Elena Love.
Oh, right.
My first liver cleanse was with Elena Love. And we did a retreat up at Mount Shasta. And I said, you know what? I can't do this as like once a year. I need to bring this back, and I started doing them on a monthly basis, teaching them in groups. And so what I did is I took everything that I've learned, and I wanted to bring it online. And I thought, well, you know, but I've got to be really careful because there are some contraindications for it. So how am I going to bring this to the masses and make it safe? And so this program has just been magnificent because now I have the confidence, I know enough that I put an assessment together, right, that I feel completely safe that when somebody fills out the assessment, we take a look at it and we say, yeah, you can either come on the program or you can't. And I can get to the masses this way. And the last liver cleanse, one more story, I have to tell a story. My last liver cleanse, we had a woman who, I didn't really know the background very much. I had her assessment, but she called me up at the end of the cleanse and she said, Jane, every morning, my shoulder dislocates and I'm in severe pain and I've been wearing a sling for 2 years. This morning I woke up and I can bring my arm over my head.
Wow.
With no pain. That's why I do this.
Right. Woo-hoo. Thank you. Awesome. Okay, well, they're putting the slides up. Oh, did you want to introduce me?
I will.
I think you say
no. Do I need to?
This is Jan.
A lot of you have spoken to Jan.
Jan first joined me in our very first, before we even had any PT. We had, it was in 2012. And she had gone through one of our blood sugar balancing programs because you see how she looked. She was worried about her weight around the middle. And, you know, and she looked at me and she said, I want to look like her. And so she joined the program. And now she looks better than me. So it's like, I think it worked. So she then said, wow, this stuff works so well for me, and now I have energy, and I can actually do something. Can I join your practitioner program? And she did, and she said, I'm not doing it to practice. I'm just doing it because I want to help my family. And they said, sure, let's get you in. So she did, and then before the program, I mean, she was like 9 months into it, and the people at her yoga center where she was teaching yoga invited her to be the nutritionist there. And so then she started seeing people, and she did her first, she was the very first one to do her case study. You have to do a case study presentation to the group as part of your certification. And she did the very first one, and I was sitting there, she couldn't see me because it was across the internet, and I was crying. I felt like a mama where their kid just starts to do something for the first time. She was listening. Oh my God, she learned this. It was so cool. So without further ado, she has a daughter who's on the autistic spectrum, so she's very interested in the neurotransmitters and how to work with people. So she's going to talk to us about the brain and amino acids and all that kind of stuff and autism.
Okay.
So thank you.
And in the interest of time, we are going to romp through these slides fairly quickly because what this is really is a preview for you of coming attractions. You'll not only have these slides, but these are actually skeleton slides. This is an entire module. Neurotransmitters, the autism spectrum can be an entire module and will be. And so as a team, we feel Teresa did a wonderful job. Ah, the mic's on now. Teresa did a wonderful job at lunch of talking about what we, and we're so grateful for what you mentioned, Teresa, because she said, you know, this program for me has filled gaps. And that is our goal for you as a team, is to make sure that we have those puzzle pieces that you are going to need to help people to get the help that they need and haven't been getting. And so that's what we're all about. As we research, as we help Dr. Rita Marie to create and develop the curriculum for you, we want to stay cutting edge. And so we are out there collecting information night and day, and it's really fun. So anyway, these are the stats, 1980s, you can see 1 in 1,000, 2016, 1 in 68 children, 1 in 42 are boys. That tells me two things. It tells me that many, many people went undiagnosed, right, earlier on. And it also tells me that we live in a very, very toxic world with genetic mutations that are less and less able to handle these toxicities, which is what we've been hearing about, canaries in the coal mine, in a sense. And so there are three core symptoms basically associated with the spectrum: social impairments, communication difficulties, and these repetitive or rather restrictive behaviors. Things that can fall on the spectrum: Asperger's, which is high functioning autism, PDD-NOS, that's pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. So that means just about anything. And then they have on top of that autistic disorder, Rett syndrome, which affects girls, comorbid disorders, Tourette's, tics, pandas. That's pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder associated with strep. Okay? Mm. Fragile X syndrome, epilepsy. Between 30 to 50% of these individuals have seizures. We look at autism now, we do here, as a whole body disorder, not just a neurological disorder. Digestion, gut microbiome, we've talked about this. Steph has touched on this. Pathogens, bacterial, yeast overgrowth. Again, 9 messages to 1 from the gut to the brain versus the brain to the gut. And this is why people are seeing tremendous improvement when we address the digestion first. Genetic SNPs, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Detox. These people have impaired pathways. And you know, as we go through some of these protocols for these people, you may recognize yourself in some of these protocols. Even though you may not be on the spectrum, these SNPs apply, and foods that you can eat and foods that affect you in a psychological manner, or anxiety, for instance, you'll find that perhaps you get some ideas for yourself or your client. So mitochondrial, poor muscle tone, oxidative stress. 62% of people on the autism spectrum have autoantibodies here to the folate receptor, alpha protein that transports folate to the central nervous system, and we've talked about that. 92% are unable to sulfate normally and detoxify. So what does that mean? 2.5 to 3 times greater oxalate levels in people on the autism spectrum, higher markers for oxidative stress, and here's our equation. Low sulfate equals high oxalate, then you get the depleted glutathione, you get mitochondrial dysfunction, and microbiome disruption. So much lower levels of bifidobacterium and higher levels of the lactobacillus on the autism spectrum, and also a lot of different bacterias here. And so what are we going to begin with? Digestion. And where do we begin in NEPT? Digestion. And you'll see all of these. We're going to support the detox pathways, yada, yada, yada. Okay? Goals. So first thing, remove offending foods and substances. It always starts and boils down to food. Then you're going to customize for significant symptoms, etc., and support and have ingredients to avoid. Again, we're going through this fast, but you'll have these slides. And these are slides you're going to see over and over because these are pillars. Foods, fats to avoid, talking about inflammation and getting an oil change. Sweet stuff to minimize. Where to start? Gluten-free, casein-free, sugar-free. Okay, and then we're going to dig a little deeper, but the next step would definitely be to assess the gut microbiome, a doctor's data test, an oat test, rebalance the gut microbiome, identify the most debilitating symptoms, and then do the easiest diet trial first. Are we going to try low salicylates, low oxalates, consider the MTHFR, Many of these people do not have detox pathways, and you yourself may not have great detox pathways. You may find you do the green cleanse and you become nauseous, or you have clients that do that. Look at different ways of detoxing, and a sauna is a great way to detox. That skin is your largest major organ, but you always want to start low and slow and progress as needed. So where are you going to start? Let's look at some symptoms and suspect foods on the spectrum, behaviors. So if you have behavior issues, hand flapping, repetitive behaviors, tics, you want to look at salicylates, amines, and glutamates. If it's more of a mood, cognition, depression, anxiety, you're going to look at all of the above, plus oxalates. Physical symptoms, okay, dark circles under the eyes, red cheeks, incontinence, hives, eczema, stimming, also all of the above. And then you're going to look at diene polysaccharides. This is where the SCD and GAPS diet comes in. Digestive pain or inflammation, anywhere. A lot of times you'll see these kids and they'll lean over couches and they don't even realize, you know, what they're doing. But you'll see kids just leaning over couches, for instance. That's a good example. All of the above plus FODMAPs. And so metabolic issues, oxalates, and then going back, food cravings. If they're craving fruit, grapes, tomato, ketchup, apples, salicylates, what's the biggest storm for a child on the autism spectrum? You take pizza, which is gluten, and salicylates, and dairy, and then you put pepperoni on it with all the processing. And you have the perfect storm, don't you, for these people. And that's what they love, and that's what they crave. And we'll talk about that. Bananas, chicken skin, bone broth in amines, glutamates if they're craving, soy sauce, bourgeois, parmesan, spinach, nuts, oxalates, okay? Healthy foods. But again, you want to watch. And the idea is to get them back to eating these foods once their gut is healed. But when they have the leaky gut, again, you're going to see a lot of these things are slipping through. Gluten and casein, wheat and dairy, opiates, food sensitivities, often crave the foods that they don't tolerate. And this is true all across the board, no matter who your client is, unfortunately. Okay, so if they have reactions to fruit, for instance, so here's some clues. Berries, melons, oranges, and nuts are okay, but the other fruits are not, then maybe look at taking out FODMAPs. Berries, melons, oranges, and nuts are not okay, then you probably have a salicylate issue. So that's the thing you might want to try removing. More clues. If onions, garlic, beets, beans, asparagus are not okay, look at FODMAPs. If beets are okay, then it might be salicylates. Again, this is that they're reacting to fruit. No fruits are tolerated, consider the low or no fructose diet. Okay, back.
That's pretty good. Doing pretty good.
If reacting to onion, broccoli, and cauliflower, then again, we're looking at the red peppers, tomatoes, almonds, avocado. Those are okay, but not your cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and egg. Then that's going to be a sulfur. So these are just different charts we have. Sulfur versus FODMAPs, etc. So these are really good ones to take a look at. Just quick considerations. Again, food cravings and obsessions, picky eating, texture issues, work time, resources, travel, immersion experiences. Lots of creative ways to get around that, and we'll have some wonderful discussions on that later on. Ideas, mono meals. Sometimes these kids will only eat one or two things, and that can be okay for a while. Again, you want to do a rotating schedule, the food elimination diet. Color coding is really helpful. Meal charts, grab-and-go foods, weekly meal prep, maybe have a salad drawer. You can make your crisper drawers into salad drawers by just pre-cutting things up so that it's like, you know how they have it Subway and it's right behind there and they go, okay, what do you want, ma'am? And you can build that salad so you can have that all ready to go, but it's a healthy Subway, right? And you don't have Jared to worry about. Okay. So.
Nice.
Just have to lighten up a little. Yeah. Okay. One thing too, no matter who you're working with, I love to do this with my clients. There's intrinsic rewards, and that's when they start to feel better. There are extrinsic rewards, and especially when you're working with kids. You can have charts, you can have sticker charts, etc. Again, like I mentioned, color coding helps, especially for young adults. Remember, these kids, these people are, this is your next homeless population if they are not able to heal. In my state alone, 5,500 individuals right now are receiving disability money, are being funded by the state, as well they should be. But the question is, let's get them better, let's help them. okay? 2,500 are on a waiting list because the funds have run out. And so again, rather than throwing money at something when it's too late, let's catch it now, and you're there to help, and just with the knowledge that you will have from these programs. So it's really interesting, 50% in their early 20s have no vocational or life skills. And this is why. So we're basically looking at recovering. This is a rescue project, in a sense. You are rescuing people. I'm big into rescue. I rescue chihuahuas. I would rescue those ferrets. I'd be your lady with the ferrets. Anyway, fun with nourishing foods. This is actually Dr. Rita Marie's slides and some of her great ideas. You'll recognize these, and she's wonderful about it. She has this master health tracker that you have seen and will see. It's a great way to provide you with a patient overview tracker, because you have got to track symptoms. And they have to, and they're most likely going to have a caregiver that you're going to be working with at first, or if they're high enough functioning that they can work with themselves, for themselves. What this is, and I don't know if you can see this slide very well, but we'll enlarge this, and this is just something that I've developed. The top in red are symptoms. The bottom are the protocol. And this is a 5-day rotational protocol for a candida cleanse, because you're going to rotate every 5 days, right, so that you're bringing something new to the candida and not getting it used to the particular protocol that you have. At any rate, by the end of the 5 days, hopefully these numbers are going down and there's nothing in the red column. Does that make sense? So they can correlate the symptoms and they can say, this is working. That's intrinsic motivation. And then your extrinsic motivation is for your client. So we're going to be going over MTHF, our basics. Some of this is from Ben Lynch's work, some considerations. One of the things that you need to do, again, it's only working at 70% or so in people who have one of these SNPs. If they have two SNPs, you're looking at about 30% functioning. Okay. So again, pretty much across the autism spectrum, 30% functioning. So first you want to improve the diet and the lifestyle. That's the first thing that you do. And then electrolytes, glutathione, methylation is supported. The cells are going to divide. If your cells divide, your magnesium, potassium is reduced. And again, you get these symptoms. So your solution, again, keep those electrolytes up, support with glutathione, open the sulfite pathways. We talked about this. And also sauna considerations. Make sure that they have plenty of electrolytes on board, that they're not glutathione deficient, that you're supplementing there. Again, contraindicated, perhaps if they're dehydrated, have adrenal fatigue, etc. And these are my references. And we're done.
Woohoo!
Take a breath.
It's just like she worked out. Thank you.
I'm so aware of your breaks. I just want you to be able
yes,
to...
Yes, yes. So we. What time is it now?
We're over. 40.
40? So we're planning on a break until o'clock. So if you want to cut in your break and take 5 minutes for questions for any of us, including Jamie, we are happy to stay. Let us know. And if you want to go for break, you can go for break. And when you come back from break, we will do... Are we going to do a drawing at the end of the break? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We don't know what it is for yet, but it will be.
It will be a
so
surprise,
questions,
but it will be a good one.
Okay, Mike. Mike's coming. Where's the mic?
That was great. I so want to cleanse my
over
liver
here.
Now.
She's standing.
Hi. I have a question for Jamie.
15.
Come up close. Jamie, still there?
If he's still here.
Yeah, he's still there.
5'2".
Okay,
hi,
Jamie.
Jamie, this is hi. This is Mary Lynn, and I have a question about testing. Using
you're stay quiet hair. And talk outside in the hall. If you're going to leave, go talk outside in the hall, please. Thank you.
The SpectraCell test and the hair analysis test, is there a place for the SpectraCell? Can you learn what you want to learn from hair analysis, or what would you learn? What would be the differences between the two, and when would you use each one?
Okay, I mean, they're looking at quite different things. With hair analysis, you're looking at a trend over a period of time, over sort of 2 to 3 months of what's being excreted in the hair. Normally, you're taking an inch and a half of the most recent growth, and you're looking at the disposition of minerals and heavy metals in the hair. with SpectraCell. It's very different. As I understand it, I don't use SpectraCell in my practice, so I'd be speaking offhand if I went through all the testing. But I understand they're measuring minerals and nutrients within the white blood cells. Mm-hmm. This is very different. I use a combination of blood and hair to assess mineral status. And there are certain minerals that I think are much easier to assess in the blood, especially iron is a big one. I also like to look at zinc and copper in the blood. But I think some of the other minerals, especially calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium, chromium, selenium, boron, molybdenum, lithium, a lot of these trace minerals, I can get a very good assessment using the hair analysis. And from an economical standpoint, I'm always looking at doing the most affordable testing that I can extract the most amount of information from for my clients. So I can run a huge number of tests. I can run organic acids, I can run Dutch tests, I can run DNA-based stool tests, I can do all sorts of methylation tests. But initially, what I want to do is I want to get a big overview and an idea conceptually of what's going on with that person. So from a cost perspective, initially, I like to use the hair analysis as a gateway test. I think SpectraCell and some of these other labs offer great testing. It all just comes down to understanding when to use these specific tests and which clients to run them on. Because I run hair analysis and functional blood chemistry on all of my clients. So to start running SpectraCell, especially in the UK where I'm based, you know, we're looking at over £400 to run that test, whereas I can run a hair analysis for about £50. So it's a big difference in terms of cost. So I'm really about extracting and looking at patterns and seeing, getting the most amount of information I can from the most affordable testing. So hopefully that answers the question.
Great. One more question?
I'm having a question. She's starting to slow down a little bit, and I don't know what else to do. You know, I'm trying to cleanse her body. She does glutathione that is suppository and on the skin. She has definitely difficult with different pathways. We did the genetics. Her homocysteine is 2.7, so it's very low. We do methylated bees and folic acid, and I mean, she's doing great, but I'm just seeing slight differences in her, and is there any suggestions that you can give me? I mean, we are very heavy in SGAPs. You're heavy in fat and heavy in protein, vegetables. I mean, she will eat anything I put in front of her, but she's gaining weight. She's estrogen dominant. Okay. I can see that. She's getting a little bit more oppositional, which was part of the PEMDAS.
Yeah.
Have you addressed the Epstein-Barr?
Yes, she doesn't have it anymore. That's been all good, and even her PEMDAS came down.
It hangs around.
It can lay dormant, yeah.
Right, so actually we just did the blood work last week, and we're waiting for the results just to see what it is. So I'm trying to figure out if I should do a liver cleanse or something to take the load of the from the liver, from the fat, and other things that may be building up.
Yeah,
she has some anxiety, sometimes really bad anxiety.
So have you addressed the gut? Have you looked at her stool analysis, oat testing?
I have not done the stool analysis, no. The doctor hasn't.
I would be looking at the gut, because if she's having anxiety and it was better, it could be coming up, you know, the GABA levels, the dopamine levels, the serotonin levels. I would definitely be looking at that gut next.
Okay. One other thing I might add to, did you say she's on GAPS?
Yes.
Okay, is she doing bone broth?
Yes.
Some kids do great with bone broth. Others do not, because it breaks down into amines. And histamine is an amine. When I tried to do bone broth, I couldn't sleep at night. It would keep me awake all night. It can be an excitotoxin. So you need to realize that, you know, it's not one thing for everybody. So GAPS works really well. That would be, if this were my daughter, this would be certainly non-invasive and a cheap thing to do. I'd take her off the bone broth for a while and just see, because bone broth can actually cause anxiety, the extra histamines, etc.
It also contains lead. I mean, it can contain lead. And they've done studies where they've compared bone broth with just chicken broth with the flesh and just broth, like vegetable broth or water. Huge difference in the amount of lead. And lead, you know, kids with these kind of issues probably have detoxification pathway blockages.
Yes, for sure.
So they don't process heavy metals real well.
It, so yes.
Right? So I would be, you know, looking at all those different things to make sure that you're not adding to her toxic burden,
right.
but you're taking away from her toxic burden,
yeah.
right? And also your point about the liver. She is on a very high-fat diet. You know, a lot of times a ketogenic diet works really well for these kids, but on the other hand, a ketogenic diet stresses the liver.
Correct.
Right? And
yeah.
I have people who have been on a ketogenic diet, and then they have to alternate off the ketogenic diet to just a real high-vegetable, low-fat diet to help their liver, because they'll start to get little indications.
And I feel like that's the thing that we're doing
yeah.
right now. We're starting to add that, and I don't
yeah.
know if there would be. I'm afraid to do a lot of like the oxalates, vegetables, and different things, and the histamine, which is the fermented vegetables. But we did this for 2.5 years, and it worked. And now I'm not sure if we need to switch.
I would go to the
yeah.
gut. I would really go to the gut and make sure it's healed, because all of these issues, once you if you have an oxalate problem and you just take out the oxalates and don't address leaky gut,
right.
you never
right.
get rid of the oxalate problem. You're
right.
always sensitive, because the only reason they get into the bloodstream and cause these systemic problems is because the gut's leaky.
Correct.
They should be eliminated in the stool.
Okay.
And you can
yeah.
track her symptoms, and that's what any of you will want to do. Track the symptoms, what she's eating, see if you can
yeah.
find a correlation. That's
yeah,
where
that's
you're the detective.
That's what we, yeah.
Thank
yep.
you so much.
Sure, you're welcome. All right, thank you very much. We'll be back at 3, and I need to take a break.